You are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support the show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Steeder.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
Ever get the feeling you've been cheated?
It is Thursday, September 24th, 2015. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the four-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, columnist Frank Rich on his piece in New York Magazine, Donald Trump Saving Our Democracy. Also on the program today, the Pope addresses a joint session of Congress, cites four great Americans, Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, Thomas Merton, and Dorothy Day. Essentially, I think we know who Abraham Lincoln and Martin Luther King are. The two Catholics, he mentions, radicals. One in terms of workers, the other in terms of peace. Also on the program today, government shutdown. We could be just a couple of days away, and it's looking like more and more likely. Pope set to address the UN. I think we'll see more emphasis on climate change there. Who could possibly screw up a lottery? It's like getting free money. Well, that'd be Chris Christie. And there could be a little bit more. How did this private entity, which has screwed up, actually lost money on the lottery for New Jersey, how did they end up getting that contract? Also on the program, and I am shocked this is yet to be reported. I haven't seen, the mainstream media is completely ignoring that President Obama has decided to endorse Joe Biden for president. But, of course, there's a give and then there's a get. We will talk about that later in the program. All that and more on today's show. The Pope did speak to Congress today. After visiting, I should say, the convent of nuns who are the Little Sisters, I think it's called, who are suing the federal government over the Affordable Care Act. So lest we get too carried away with how much the Pope is trying to bring the Catholic Church into the future, the Pope did call for the abolishment of the death penalty in front of Congress today. He also called for the protection of unborn life. Not terribly surprising. He did speak to environmental concerns and climate change. Didn't pound anybody over the head with it. I imagine we're going to hear more of that at the UN. But like I say, he mentioned two people in addition. He basically said, I want to speak to the American public through the stories of four people. And he mentioned Abraham Lincoln, Martin Luther King, and then he mentioned Dorothy Day, who was the founder of the Catholic Worker Movement. And very closely associated with Catholicism that is very progressive in its outlook. Pro-union, anti-poverty, pacifist, anti-government in many respects. I think you could almost say anarchism. Some have said, I think maybe even she did on some level. Thomas Merton, I am only familiar with his work actually through James Douglas's The Unspeakable, which I think Merton actually coined. And he was a sort of a Christian Catholic philosopher, mystic of some sorts, and wrote quite a bit of anti-war, and I believe was also involved in a correspondence with JFK, and according to Douglas's book, really influenced JFK's perspective. But so very interesting choice of who to raise in his speech. You'll obviously hear more about that. We're going to be talking to Frank Rich because I love the idea that Donald Trump is actually sort of a net positive for us in the context of for those of us who want to see the Republican Party fail at numerous ways and levels, and also to awaken the press. One of the things that Frank Rich in our interview today and in his piece in New York Magazine talks about is Donald Trump as the ultimate insulter. And new polling out shows Donald Trump still very comfortably in the lead in the Republican race. You see people like Carly Fiorina and Ben Carson dip up and down a little bit. Marco Rubio got a little bit of a bounce, and certainly Donald Trump, I think, recognizes that. And so we heard this from Donald Trump as he called into the Joe Scarborough show today.
But Donald, at what point do you start fighting Democrats and liberals and people on the left instead of these sort of intramural wars with Republicans?
Well, I think you know me, and I think you know that I'm a fighter and I know how to fight. And I have a fight now with, you know, these the remaining people that are candidates because you have two battles. You have this battle and then you have the other battle. But you have to get through this one before you get to the other one. And you know, I mean, I'm looking at guys like Marco Rubio, who has the worst voting record in the United States Senate, and a young guy, although he sweats more than any young person I've ever seen in my life. I've never seen a person sweat. I've never seen a guy down water like he downs water. I've never seen they bring it in buckets for this guy. But you know, I have various people that I have to knock out before I get to the other race. And when I get to the other race, I will win that race.
So there you have it. Is it immature, sophomoric? Yes. Is it going to be effective? I think that if Marco Rubio does happen to sweat and get dry mouth in these situations, which we've seen over and over again, my guess is that Marco Rubio might get even more dry mouth and even more sweaty next time we see him. And again, I'm enjoying it, and we will talk in just a moment to Frank Rich as to why this is helpful. Also, a reminder of Indian Summers. There's a new masterpiece series on PBS. It's a twist on the period drama, provides a window into both British and Indian experiences during that time. This is back in 1932, during the twilight of the British rule. I guess they call it the Raj in India. It officially ended, as you know, in 1947, but the beginning of the end was in those early 30s. Features an international cast of Indian, British, and Pakistani actors, including Julie Walters, Nikesh Patel, and Henry Lloyd Hughes. It's set in the Simla region near the Himalayas, where British would relocate during the summer to work and basically to party. So while the British in India are living a life of privilege, the Indian people are beginning to rise up with calls for independence from British rule. There's multiple simmering plot lines that touch on politics, class, romance, and the rise of a nation. We'll put a link on the front page of majority.fm to a 2-minute teaser video. But check it out. Indian Summers, The Raj, Romance, and Revolution. We'll be right back after this. We are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to the program Frank Rich. He is a writer at large, of course, has written a piece in the New York Magazine, Donald Trump is Saving Our Democracy, and also EP of literally one of the few comedies I watch anymore on television, Veep. Welcome to the program, Frank.
Thanks for having me.
So let's get into this, because I have been looking for these type of pieces, and I don't want to jump. I want to obviously, but I want to know by the end of this when we're going to get to the point where other people in the media understand at least part of what you're saying here in terms of Donald Trump. Maybe hope springs eternal. But before we get there. Let's talk about a little bit about the different sort of excuses that the press is making for the rise of Donald Trump, because it's fascinating to me. There's this compulsion.
Yes. I mean, look, from the first when he began, it was considered to be an utter joke, and many people thought he wouldn't even announce or disclose if he did, in fact, disclose his financials and all the rest of it. So it was that he was a celebrity because he was on The Apprentice for however many years. Or it was that he was like Bernie Sanders when he's, in fact, nothing like Bernie Sanders, who's been in Washington for almost a quarter century and has a consistent ideology, which Trump doesn't have. Then he was like Huey Long, or he was like Father Coughlin, but he's not like them either. Then it was the American people are just idiots, seem to be the feeling. They'll go for anyone who entertains them. Then there was an excuse by some on the right, like George Will and Charles Krauthammer, the conservative columnist. He wasn't actually a Republican. He was a fake Republican, as if Republicans didn't share his views about immigration, the birther conspiracy theories about Obama and all the rest of it. So, and then a lot of liberal pundits sort of took the attitude, I'm embarrassed I'm even writing about this. I should be writing about, right. I don't know what Marco Rubio thinks about foreign policy. And excuse me for trying to explain this, you know, this little turd that has sort of appeared in the political scene.
I mean, let's take that last one, because when Huffington Post made that decision to sort of sequester Trump in the entertainment section, you know, what I found offensive about it. And you know, I'm obviously coming from a specific ideological perspective. Mm-hmm. But what I found offensive about it was that if you're going to put him there, there's really little reason not to put the rest of them there. And his ascendancy, I mean, we've already seen this guy has basically knocked Scott Walker out of the race, it seems to me.
Right, and I would argue that he's perilously close to knocking Jeb Bush out. I mean, Jeb Bush, who was the establishment candidate, has all the money in the organization. I guess maybe he can buy his way back in, but there are new polls overnight that show even as Trump's lead has fallen a bit, Bush has gotten absolutely no traction. You know, he's third or fourth in every poll. He's barely around 10%, if that. And so this idea that he's entertainment and that he's sucking the air out of the coverage for all these other brilliant candidates is ridiculous. Indeed, I argue in the piece, the real entertainers, in a way, are the candidates who just stick to a script and use scripted lines all the time. They're more play-acting than Trump is. When you have, you know, Hillary Clinton, as reported on the front page of the Times, and happily given out by her campaign to the Times, that she is going to now script in humor and accountability about the emails and being human, because focus groups have basically told her to do that. That's more the creation of, say, a network television executive than someone like Trump, who rides off the rails and doesn't do what he says, outrageous as much of it is, based on focus groups.
Right. I mean, I mean, my perspective is that they all are they're all just approaching marketing from a different perspective. And his is maybe a little bit less scripted. But I mean, he knows the parameters of his character. He just decides to do a little more improv, I guess. And
yes.
And so, but let's talk, you know, you mentioned in the piece attending a talk by two American historians, Brinkley, and I can't remember the
second. It's David Blight of Yale, the author of A Race and Reunion, and Alan Brinkley, who wrote Voices of Protest, which is sort of the definitive book about Huey Long and Father Coughlin and their sort of populist demagoguery in the during the Depression. They were both in a Politico magazine seminar that was, you know, published, and they both said there's no precedent for Trump. You know, Brinkley said there's nothing like Coughlin and Huey Long. For one thing, Trump has no ideology except that everything he says is right. That's his only idea. His ideology is the ideology of Donald Trump. And David Blight made the point that really hit home with me, which is he's more like a fictional character. He's like a rogue or a confidence man out of a Mark Twain book, like The Gilded Age. And I think that's absolutely true. He's sort of his prototype is in fiction, and particularly I'm struck by his resemblances to fictional presidential candidates or presidents in the whole spate of comedies that have grown up since Watergate and Vietnam basically sapped American confidence in Washington. So films like Bullworth, which, you know, Warren Beatty plays a California senator who insults his own contributors and breaks up a presidential debate and immediately becomes more successful as a result. Or Nashville, the great Robert Altman movie, which has a candidate you never even meet saying preposterous things but stirring everyone up. Bob Roberts, the Tim Robbins movie, sort of a mockumentary 20 or so years ago about a right-wing folk singer who had made a killing in finance, who runs as sort of, as someone calls him, a crypto-fascist clown, and finds people charmed by him. That's what Trump resembles. As I write in the piece, it's as if Hollywood leading man that Jeff Daniels played in Woody Allen's Purple Rose of Cairo leapt out of the screen.
Right.
It's like, he's like one of these characters leaping out of the screen into the real life of politics.
And I should also say, you mentioned, you cite The Magic Christian by Terry Southern, which it's been years since I read that book, but I can't recommend that highly enough.
It's a great book, and I hadn't read it in years either, and I pulled it out and read it. And by the way, I say to your listeners, don't see the movie version, which they bought the title. There was a movie made with Ringo Starr. It has almost nothing to do with the book. Find Terry Southern's book. It's in print, published in 1959, and the premise of it is that a billionaire named Guy Grand decides to use his money for incredible pranks that embarrass almost every institution in America. And one example that I cite in the piece is he gives $1 million in secrecy to an actor of a live network medical drama in prime time, and to the actor playing a wise old physician who's doing surgery, and in the middle of the surgery, the guy says to the actor says to the national audience, "I can't stand this drivel anymore. If I have to say any more of it, I'm going to vomit into the incision I just made in this patient." And everyone's outraged, and the FCC is outraged, the network is outraged, but then the critics are outraged, and then they discover, wait a minute, ratings are going up. We like this.
Now, and on some level, that is basically what, I mean, I think that's why you get 24, 25 million viewers for these debates, because you just are, everybody's just waiting to see what Trump is going to say next on some level. But
absolutely.
Now,
and by the way, one of the funny things, The Magic Christian, and it really, there's so many great things, but in that particular incident, once the network figures out people like it, they start trying to create their own, you know, off the book wild incidents with the actors, but of course the public doesn't buy it because only the original stunt could do it authentically, bring it off authentically.
But here's the thing about Trump's sort of popularity. I mean, the popularity, I think, like the enjoyment, I would imagine there were far more people less interested in the sort of the dynamics of the Republican race tuning into that debate than there were people who were just interested in the dynamics of the actual just sort of debate as an entertainment value. But the popularity of Trump, it seems to me, I mean, just if we take the polls as any indication, is firmly embedded in the base of the Republican Party. Now, it may not go past whatever it's, you know, the high point has been 32% of likely Republican primary voters. Nevertheless, that's a huge chunk, and it's certainly the only candidate that the base has coalesced around. You know, we compare this to 2012 polling. It's really sort of stunning. I mean, you've got Mitt Romney who throughout almost, you know, the 2 years prior to the election just basically stays in double digits. And there are other people who go up and down, you know, relative to that. But this is a very different dynamic. So I guess my point is, like, when a guy like Brinkley says that Trump's ideology is everything he says is right. I mean, is there a bigger, deeper story that on some level, for at least the base of the Republican Party, that has also become their ideology?
Maybe so. That combined with the nativist and bigoted elements of what he says. I mean, the fact is that his wanting to, you know, deport illegal immigrants en masse basically was Romney's position in 2008 and a version of it in 2012. His misogyny is part of the Republican brand. Indeed, one thing that people, when Megyn Kelly called Trump out in the Fox News debate for calling women pigs and so forth, and everyone, Republicans, said, "I'm glad she did it, and I'm with Megyn Kelly," and he then insulted Megyn Kelly. The fact is, when she did, his retort was, "Well, all of this does apply to Rosie O'Donnell," and what did the huge Republican audience in the arena do? They cheered and applauded.
Exactly.
And so that shows what they really think, even if they're paying lip service to agreeing with Megyn Kelly. Yes, I think some of this is deeply embedded in the base. And to get back to the different dynamic you're talking about, Sam, there have been polls, the two new polls in the past day or so. They're almost identical in the results. They show Trump at 25 or 26 with Carson 7 or 8 points behind, and then Fiorina behind him. But if you add up those three candidates, it's over 50% in both polls. So you have a Republican electorate that is saying, we want one of these people who are all fairly extreme, all outsiders, over any of these supposedly wonderful Rubios and Bushes and other people that the party establishment has given us. That is, as you say, that is a completely different dynamic from the Romney race in 2012.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, we had Rick Perry ascend in at one point, Newt Gingrich. I mean, Herman Cain, I guess, it would be considered an outsider. But it seems to me, to a certain extent, I don't want to belabor this too much, but saying, you know, specifically a guy who believes everything he says is right, who is also a businessman, right? Because we've been told by the Republican Party for quite some time that, you know, George Bush is going to be the CEO president. Mitt Romney would have been the CEO president. Now we literally have a, you know, the who's a bigger CEO than the CEO who's a billionaire.
Right.
That man is right is also sort of seems to me a central tenet of nativism. I mean, you can't be nativist, it seems to me, if you don't perceive that you are always right, because the other then becomes what is wrong. And I guess building on that, the notion of the Fiorina and Carson as outsiders, do you think it's the fact that just that they're outsiders, or is it that their future is not necessarily or I should say this, that for Carson and Fiorina, they are unbound by the constraints that a typical white Republican politician would have, someone who wants to sort of maintain the party, because she can say things about women. Carson can say things about black people in a way that, you know, a guy like Jeb Bush couldn't, for instance.
Well, I think that's right. They have no loyalty to the party or the old ideas of the party establishment. I think that's exactly right.
And so they're freed up. So it's less that they're outside of Washington, because they all seem to run against Washington, in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. I agree.
And so, I mean, I guess, what does this say about where the Republican Party has gone?
Well, I think the Republican Party, and I'm going to have to be brief because I have to go to a non-political event in my life in a couple of minutes, but I think the Republican Party is really does not have a core. It is a bunch of billionaires, don't you think, sugar daddies, running these super PACs, Sheldon Adelson, the Koch brothers, whoever it is on a given day, running, they've taken over the party. They have their own particular agendas, their own particular candidates. So it's like a bunch of fiefdoms in, you know, medieval Europe. There's no there. And the party brand is very bad. And there's a possibility they're going to shut down the government again imminently over Planned Parenthood. And so they're really, you know, there's no one in charge. And look at Reince Priebus, the nominal head of the Republican National Committee. He came crawling to Trump Tower to get him to sign a worthless,
right,
non-binding pledge that he would not run as a third-party candidate. That, to me, says it all about the state of the Republican Party.
All right, lastly, I know you have to go, and I appreciate your time.
No, sure, thank you.
Do you think there will be a point where we get the mainstream and conventional political press to understand that this is a story more about the Republicans than it is Donald Trump?
I hope so, but old habits die hard. And so far, as you and I have both agree and have seen, it's not impressive. How many columns have we read that begin, well, Trump aside, let's talk about the real candidates in the Republican race.
Right.
Let's compare them on foreign policy, or let's compare them on immigration or whatever. It's as if the elephant in the room, they see it, but it doesn't matter. It's like, you know, like a cloud passing over this pristine, civic-minded party. So the whole orientation is so wrong. I don't know. We're not seeing it yet. I hope we do for the sake of people understanding what's going on better.
Indeed. Frank Rich, thank you so much for your time today. We will link, of course, to your piece in New York Magazine.
Thank you so much. It was great talking to you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right, folks. There you have it. A really interesting piece I largely agree. I can't help but think that there has to be a time where there is even more understanding that this is functionally the Republican. This is the Republican ideology. And the idea of a white guy getting up there. I mean, what did he just said yesterday? I'm sick of this political correctness crap. That's why the guy is winning. And the reason why he's unassailable is because there's two different elements to this, right? He's winning because he gets up there and says, I'm sick of this political correctness crap. He's unassailable because all of his attributes line up with everything that the Republican Party has been espousing as being the fundamental building blocks of who we should be. If you're rich, there's something morally appropriate about you. If you're poor, there's something morally degenerate about you, and that you need to suffer more to get your dignity. A businessman uber alles. So it's fascinating to watch. I mean, there was a piece out today from Politico, something to the effect of, I don't have it right here in front of me, Donald Trump stalling. Well, yeah. In other words, his numbers are stable in this poll that came out today. You know, go back and look at the where Mitt Romney was at times. It still is amazing to me. And, I ran into Indy Mike at the breakfast I attended at Lawyer Matthews' house following the holiday yesterday. And I should say Happy New Year to you Jews and Happy Eid to you Muslims. I know it's very controversial for me to do it. And my kids have the school off today.
Really?
Yes, for Eid.
Oh, so they had 2 days off.
That's right.
How nice.
Yep. But it was fun to get Indy Mike. Indy Mike is convinced that Carly Fiorina is now the savior of the Republican Party. He was a little surprised to find out that she is being supported by the PACs of other Republican candidates. Nevertheless, and I understand Donald Trump is an offensive character, but from a strategic standpoint, if you are interested in a better country, ultimately, the success that Donald Trump has in the Republican Party ultimately is going to be beneficial.
That's exactly what Michael and I were saying yesterday, and some listeners were not pleased.
Well, I mean, I can understand that. I can understand that. But this is wreaking havoc on the Republican Party. And at one point, and maybe it comes after he wins there's going to be a window. I don't know that this guy is going to get the nomination. I tend to think he won't. Though it's very difficult to imagine who might win the nomination. I mean, I remember in 2012 saying often, I thought it was possible no one would win the nomination. And this feels the same way. But the question is like, who's going to be the candidate that the Republican Party holds their nose and decides will be the nominee? I still find it very hard to believe that the Republican Party is going to nominate a guy named Rubio. And it will be interesting to see if Trump goes after Rubio in the next debate directly, how Rubio handles it. Yes, that's a good guess. That's a good guess. And I know, and look, I know, you know, the I was explaining to someone last night, like I'm spending a lot more time on the polls and this dynamic. And part of it is because I find it so entertaining. But part of it is I actually genuinely believe that there's going to be long-term implications from this race in a way that there wasn't from the Mitt Romney election. I really do believe that it's going to – there could be a point where you're going to convince some people in the media, like, hey, there's something really wrong with the Republican Party. Like, there's – I mean, the idea that everything he says is right is his ideology. Well, it's obviously one that's shared, and it's not just I think Donald Trump is right about everything. It's he's telling me I'm right about everything. And that's the exact same message that, Rush Limbaugh has been propagating for 20 some odd years, 30 years now almost. Have no doubt. Don't let any of that creeping doubt in. Speaking in platitudes. Indy Mike was convinced that, like, well, look, he's just offering everybody this sort of like optimistic vision that, you know, we're great. And I'm saying, wait, are you talking about Ronald Reagan or are you talking about Donald Trump? Like, I mean, that was the part that motivated a big part of the Reagan coalition. Just wasn't as prominent as it was, as it is today. So, hopefully we'll hear more. Hopefully we'll see more of Trump in the coming days, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, I wanted to also tell you about Sportocracy. What is Sportocracy? Do you remember when we did our Indiegogo campaign? We raised a bunch of money. And the idea was we raised a bunch of money because we wanted to both upgrade our video stuff, and we've got the computer now. We're setting it up soon. We've got the video. You've seen a little bit of it during our debate coverage. We're going to be building the set. Wheels of Rome wasn't built in a day.
But the Indiegogo campaign we started, we were able to upgrade the current computer, and we live stream in high definition every single day because of all of you viewers.
And it's it provides. I mean, YouTube's not a huge source of revenue for us, but it's getting bigger. And the other part of that was we're trying to launch other podcasts under the Majority.fm banner. And the idea being that we want to hit some other topics that we think are at the very least sort of somewhat tangential to what we do, but are not sort of restricted in the same way that that politics are. I mean, the reality is that there's only – and it cuts both ways, frankly. The reality is in this country, if you have 5-10% of the population that is very informed, you can actually have a big sway on politics. Things like net neutrality, Keystone XL pipeline perhaps. Hillary Clinton apparently has come out against. Things like don't cut Social Security. And on and on. But the flip side of that is that there's not a lot of people who want to talk about politics on a regular basis, which is why this audience is so unique and exclusive in many ways. However, sports, other topics that we're doing, we're going to put out a show that's going to sort of use our archives in a smarter way. We're looking at developing other shows. And the idea is that these shows will provide us with some revenue down the road. Not a huge amount, because obviously, you know, we're just we're doing a different model, and the hosts, you know, it's a revenue for the hosts and whatnot, but some. And so you can help with that. Now that you've funded it, you can help it succeed by going to iTunes, searching Sportocracy, Sportocracy, if you want, and subscribing. Even if you don't like sports, even if you don't have time for another podcast, just subscribe. It will help us get it into the new and notable section, and then hopefully it'll take care of itself from there. If you can give a ranking, that helps too, particularly at the beginning. A review, if you like it, listen to it, and then if you like it, give it a review. But all of those things will help. So check that out. All right, folks, we're going to take a quick break. Got a lot of sound in the fun half of the program.
Fun sound, too.
Fun sound. We'll go over the government shutdown. I mean, and I imagine we're going to be talking more about this in the coming days. Government shutdown, not as apocalyptic as the as busting through the debt ceiling. However, it is very problematic for a number of reasons. In addition to the incredible hardship it imposes on federal workers, it just makes life miserable for these people, and not just miserable, but scary. I don't know about you, but most people, if they don't get paid for a couple of weeks, you're in big trouble. Big, big trouble. And then you've got to start taking out loans. You max out your credit card, and you've dug yourself a hole. That even once you pay, even if you get back pay at that point, well, now you owe interest. That's just one of the impacts on just on real human beings, but also it impacts sort of entities, and I mean it has less direct impacts, but impacts nevertheless on other people. And so we're going through this again, and I don't know. I just set the table for this. I will walk through how it's most likely to go down. And, of course, it's a function of funding Planned Parenthood in some respect. But I think the subtext here is that members of the House really want to get rid of John Boehner. And I think that's a big part of this. And you have, you know, guys like Marco Rubio, Carly Fiorina going into these debates, Carly Fiorina making – you know, lying about videos, or saying, you know, she saw this when there was somebody on the video who said they saw this, supposedly. And then Marco Rubio saying no exception for abortions for people who are even rape victims or incest victims. I mean, just the extremism on the right now is just, it's off the charts. And it's driving what's happening in Congress. All right, we're going to take a quick break. 646-257-3920 is the number. 646-257-3920 is the number. We will be back in just a moment.